on?
Go ahead.
Yeah, okay, it's February the 4th, 2013. Calling to order the meeting of the City of Ocala Firefighters Retirement Plan. It is 1:08 or 1:07 in the afternoon. And the first thing on our agenda is the quarterly report, so.
I'm opening this for me. I'm having.
You should tea.
Trouble. Yeah, yeah, I did that yesterday, I shouldn't have.
Have to use your teeth.
I know. That costs about $1,500 a tooth.
That's the old wall mount.
Yeah.
All right, well, hopping into the Bogdan book. First quarter was a little lackluster. Fortunately, January, month of January was very strong, surprisingly, so hopefully we stay on that trajectory.
That'd be nice.
And that will get us a long way towards the hurdle rate this year. But if you flip to page two, just a brief summary recap. This is the December quarter, so remember, everybody, you know, we had the election, we had all the jabber about the fiscal cliff, and, you know, everything was just kind of on hold. You had some positive developments in Europe, so if you look at the top right chart there, international stocks were actually very strong, MSCI EFA. For as far as developed countries go, the average stock is a 6.6%, and most of that actually was the local stock markets. It wasn't a whole lot of currency movement as far as the dollar and the major basket of currencies during that time. The S&P 500 was flat. I mean, it was down 0.4.
Yeah. I have a quick question on that.
Yeah.
How much that EFA, how much, are there no U.S. stocks in that at all?
In the
EFA?
EFA? No.
Okay, so, no. But there are a lot of companies that are European that sell to the Americans, and a lot of that's reflected in there, like Nestle and...
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, a lot of our bigger, you know, Unilever and InBev and all that, those are all European stocks. But when the American economy does go, they're selling to us, so that would reflect in those numbers.
Yes. Yeah, because, I mean, you figure, I think the latest number, about 50, 55% or so of the companies in the S&P 500, domestic companies, 55% of their earnings of about 60% of the stocks in that index come from overseas.
Okay. All right.
And then looking at the EFA, the developed country stocks, I'm not sure what the reverse percentage is, but most of those stocks' earnings lately have been driven more by activity in China. And and not to get on a tangent, but it was really interesting. I was in Tanzania over the holiday, and they are dominated by Chinese goods to the extent that they can't even get an Apple iPhone that's not counterfeit. I mean, everything is imported from China. Which, again, that's a little microcosm of the country in Africa, but you know, I guess the point is, in talking with a lot of international travelers and, you know, my unscientific, hey, well, you know, what's happening in Germany and, you know, all the different people you get to speak with who usually are business people, you know, that it's China is really becoming a dominant economic force,
right.
You know, arguably more dollars than the U.S. In growing from a consumption demand standpoint. So, yeah, to the extent there's overlap going both ways, but, you know, I think the S&P 500 is probably more impacted by their global earnings than the EFA is impacted by activity in the U.S.
Okay.
At this point anyway. So if you take a look at the style boxes, you know, value, well, mid-cap was the best performer, small cap, so basically smaller capitalization stocks fared a little better. And then we don't have the number here. Well, we do on the top right chart on page 3. Value stocks outperformed growth stocks. And then shifting over to the bond market, you know, it was kind of a sideways period for interest rates. So treasuries were flat. I mean, rates went up a little bit, so you had a negative total return. TIPS were up 7/10, and, you know, looking at the Barclays Corp IG, again, that's the investment-grade corporate bond index. That was up 1.1%. So the more yield and coupon you had in your portfolio, that's really what drove the bond returns for the period. So it was a pretty uneventful, kind of a flat, boring period, actually, to report on. Since we didn't fall off the fiscal cliff and none of that stuff materialized. If you shift over to page 8, one of the ongoing themes that continued materially during the quarter, the top right chart there shows the quality. And again, with the global bond strategy, those two strategies, the PIMCO and the Templeton you have in place, you were able to pick up, those managers were able to pick up additional returns from a continued outperformance of lower quality. So high yield was up 3.6%, BAAs were up 1.7%. And at this juncture, the PIMCO strategy now has been to pull back, take their foot off the gas, and they're starting to move back up in quality. And while they're maintaining positions because they want that coupon advantage, they're really moving to underweight now high yield, and they own a lot of BAA or investment grade, so that's their strategy there, and they continue to have a pretty good allocation to sovereign, you know, foreign government bonds in the portfolio. And the Templeton Global Bond Portfolio is pretty much staying the course. There's an amazing lack of activity in that fund, and they just position so well. So they continue to benefit from that position. I think they traded like two bonds.
Right, yeah, excuse me one second, I have to pull up the chart. Go ahead. I'm in a meeting. I'll have to call you back. You sure? Okay. Give me those numbers. You got those numbers? Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, the one that should be like the third one down. Life annuity. Yes. Okay. All right. And we're gonna approve it at the meeting, so it's done deal. Okay. Bye. Sorry about that.
Okay. So if you flip to, let's look at the dollar, change in dollar. And flip up to page 16. And if you follow with me on the bottom line there, you can see the total fund opened the new plan year with $35,929,259. We did, you know, some rebalancing during the quarter, you know, basically putting the R&D monies to work as we discussed at the last quarterly meeting. So that was all executed, which basically we ended up putting about 700, let's call it 760,000 into fixed income, the fixed income allocation and about $225,000 into the Wells Fargo Large Cap Growth Index Fund. That was what got our allocation back in line with target policy. So that was taken care of. During the period, we had contributions totaling $691,838. Pensioner distributions were $661,754. Getting close on a cash flow basis now because I know changes are happening. Management fees were $9,601 for the quarter. The income component, $365,441. That's helping provide an offset to the distributions. The appreciation, again, pretty much a flat month, $136,976. Flat in this account. I wouldn't mind that number in my account, but that's pretty flat, $36 million. So we closed 12/31 with $36,452,157. Any questions on the cash flow?
I assume that the management fees tonight, that's just for our real estate. Everything other's already calculated in?
Yeah, everything, yes. Since all of the others are funds, the Wells Fargo are funds, the Vanguard Small Cap are funds, so that actually would be the Dalton,
Dalton
fee, yeah, because the... I believe the way we set it up, I believe the American Core Realty and UBS are showing you net numbers. They're pulling a fee from that as well. I don't think that's a separate billing.
Okay. And Dalton, I guess that the numbers are already, because we pay them separately too.
Yeah, so that's, I believe that's the only line item fee okay. that hits. Yeah.
So if I'm reading this correctly, as distributions increase from this point forward, then distributions will then exceed contributions.
If what?
Right.
If distributions increase from this point forward, then distributions will exceed contributions for the first time in a while, in a long time.
I don't. Know that that's necessarily true, because as you know, more people retire, more people are being hired. I'm thinking it should stay pretty much the same unless you have a closed plan.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, are we hiring?
Yes.
Yeah. We are, as we lose them, we are hiring. And isn't there two or three on?
As excluding administrative staff, as line people, guys like me, we are replaced. We're one of the categories that they get in the city that get replaced one for one. It's outside of, for example, a person running away the offices, and they go, you know, they have to go back and stop and say, okay, can we take that person's job and give it to someone else, move it to another division, anything else like that.
We're this is from that.
Right, we're, because of the nature of what we do, there isn't anybody else to do it. So those jobs get replaced. So our manpower stays basically flat.
But you're replacing those with higher pay and more experience, more years of service and higher pay with those that presumably have lower experience, lower years of service and lower pay. So contributions are a percent of
as that person leaves, other people move to take his place. Yeah. So,
and so you'll have a captain taking, if the battalion chief leaves, then you'll have a captain taking that battalion slot. And he has a lot of experience, you know, maybe not as much as him, but he has a lot, so he'll step up, and that's kind of the whole thing shifts up.
I see.
Basically,
you add somebody at the bottom, then everybody moves up.
The paychecks stay the same, but the names move around.
If he takes a captain slot, then he's probably, then that captain has to replace, it's probably going to be a driver that replaces the captain, so there's another promotion there, and kind of the whole thing goes up.
Okay.
So, but I would, I would think that doesn't it typically maintain, you know, your income should equal your outflow, and you don't really want to get into your base.
Yeah, I mean,
times you're going to dig into your base, but then in good times you're going to make that up. but you should be kind of right about there at all times.
Yeah, the, you know, since you guys have been in a balanced hire, I think the last couple of years, though, I think you had more retirements, didn't you?
We had stayed.
You had stayed.
We're not down. If we're down somebody, it's because they just left.
Okay.
And we have only lost, what, one or two this last year?
Yeah, very few.
Okay.
But it's all been, the only time that we would go backwards, so to speak, is if we would have somebody above the rank of captain leave and we not replace that person.
Yeah. Okay.
And we have not done that yet.
Okay.
I don't think. Right. Even with the movement of all the reorganization, we have not.
Yeah,
the same amount of chairs are still there.
We lost the deputy chief, and right. They just gave that work to somebody else. You know, when you get up into the highest levels, they are not in the labor union.
Right.
You know, above captain, they're not in the labor union, so it's not negotiable and everything, and they can do whatever they want.
Right.
That high.
Those positions do get the look that we talked about before, but the actual on the ground people who get in the trucks, there's no one else to give that job to, so those jobs do get replaced. But yeah, I think we're at the same manpower we've been at. As a matter of fact, we went up because of the Safer Grant kids.
Right.
So actually, we've increased contributors by three. Total manpower has gone up by three people over the past couple of years. Everything else has remained flat, so we actually have more people contributing.
Okay.
Now, historically, I don't know, just because I have this one picture, not the whole photo album.
Yeah.
Where were we a year ago? Were we close a year? I mean, I don't know if you remember. I mean, that's more of a shoot from the hip.
I think this plan has always had a healthy cash flow. You've always generated more from contributions than distributions. I mean, that's something we usually review. We'll review that with Randall when he does your actuarial report, which I guess that'll probably be next quarter. So we look at it on an annual basis, you know, look at the changing demographics of the plans, just so we can project out.
Just you remember, just in contact and everything, just go, yeah, they've always been kind of closer.
Yeah.
You know, a year ago they were 200,000 apart, now they're, you know, that kind of thing. You know,
yeah.
if there is a progression, or we just always been kind of close to it, you know, that which I have no idea because I don't have that sense of history.
Yeah. Now, to your point, Randy, if the plan was frozen,
then you're going to see that.
Right.
Eventually,
then
you will
see it.
Then you go upside down because you've got to lower your return assumption, your amortization window shortened.
Right.
And in fact, we were talking about that at the FPTA. I did a little presentation with an actuary there, and we were showing, you know, the consultant has to come in and recommend lowering your investment return, which means less coming from investments, more has to come from city contribution.
Right.
And this one case, it was actually a general plan that we went through. The city contribution actually increased over 50% for the next 10, 15 years. It wasn't until the 17th, 18th, 19th year that they started to see the projected savings from, you know,
freezing the plan.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's an important consideration. Cash flow, if the plan is being managed correctly, cash flow is going to go upside down. Yeah, so.
But you're talking about if they freeze a plan. Not,
yeah, that's only if you freeze it.
Which we're not, there's not even talk of doing that in this.
I mean,
well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was just to close out the
right.
You know, scenario discussion.
Right. Right. It's in our current existence, that's not.
Right. No, it's not an issue. Your plumbing's working great, and cash flow's fine. You know, you're funded. Your rate of return is reasonable, and we had a with the financial crisis. Obviously, we took some step backwards, but it's quickly moving back online. So yeah, everything's fine.
They were very positive at FPPTA about 2013.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were saying it's looking like it's going to be a good year. A reasonable year anyway.
Yeah, that's a flaw. This plan should be in good shape. And your plan expenses are so low too. So that's another thing. But going to page 19 then, let's turn cash flow into percentages. And if you look at the top left line there for the quarter, the fund was up 1.4%. And that was about on the index. The median fund out there was up 1.75%. So just for being fractionally, you know, less for the quarter, it was such a tight return then. We're starting out anyway below average, 65th percentile, just for comparison to other plans. So the year-over-year number for December, now remember now we pick up, we advance a year in quarters, so now we're picking up a bad, you know,
right,
a bad quarter number in the averages, so it drops us down to about 12%, not that that's a bad number. And then the three-year, we're annualizing at 7.7, so yeah, we're almost at the 7.75 mark there. 5 years, you know, we're still pulling up that average. So basically, just a couple standout issues, since we're mostly indexed here, just go down about halfway. Unfortunately, Dalton, this has been very frustrating. They had a flat quarter. The Russell 3000 value is up 1.6 year over year. You know, they're still trailing 9.5 versus 17.5. Our research guys met with Jeff Reiner, the chief investment officer, and some of their analysts, and we're still fine. They haven't changed anything. We went back, as did Dalton, and we looked at their batting average. In their well over 10-year history, this was a very fluky period. We looked at their hit rate, their batting average, and this is the lowest by far that each of the analysts, remember they have 10 analysts, sector specialists, and each one covers a sector, you know, tech, healthcare. This was the lowest year ever that consistently, except for technology, and that's their newest guy, that their batting average was below 50%. In fact, it was like in the 30s. It was terrible. And, you know, we went in, there's no, they can't put their finger on any definitive thing in the process that caused this. It was just chalking it up to a very unfortunate, but, you know, very aberrational period of time. And, we still feel this is a solid firm, and given enough time to let these people do their work, you know, they will bring value and they will protect on the downside when the market turns. But I know we've got investment policy performance standards, and you know, we've talked about it, the consecutive quarters is also very unusual. This is the most consecutive quarters in a row that this manager is underperformed, so you know, we have to raise a flag. And then, you know, for our part, you know, we got to go back in and see what's going on, see if anything's different. Nothing's changed. So our research guys are still comfortable. I personally, to the extent that I participate with them, you know, through the investment policy committee, I got to accept our guys' opinion on it. I think they're, I think we should continue to, let the strategy run.
I know what happened.
Yeah, it was pretty much.
I know what
right
happened.
When we funded.
That's it. We picked up. If you want to jinx any of your managers, let me know.
Yeah.
And we'll pick them, and they'll go straight down. That's what happened every time we pick an active manager. Best numbers ever. Down markets, they do good. Up markets, they do good. 10-year record, great. 7-year, 3-year, just unbeatable. Best, then we hire them.
Yeah, and we even looked at the cycle. I remember looking at their relative performance cycle, because everybody's going to cycle in and out of favor, but the idea is that over time they're actually going to accumulate more dollars, right? So I remember even looking at the cycle of the manager and having the discussion, you know, we can never call a turn, but, you know, they were definitely cycling positively at that time. And I mean, it can go on for a long period of time. You just never know. But so that's really the only exception issue. And, you know, when you look at that little performance deficit, obviously, for the last year, you know, unfortunately, that's where it's come from. But, you know, our recommendation is to stay with the manager. We'll continue to obviously update you. The other exception items were positive, and if you go to page 20, the manning and the peer strategy is moved back ahead. So while they were about on top for the quarter at 5.89%, the year-over-year number, they're ahead now, 19 versus 17, and they're in the 27th percentile. You know, so they're picking up some of that ground that was lost early on.
Sorry, where are you again?
I'm on page 20.
Yeah, but I'm talking about
second
Manning.
Line item.
Manning?
Yep, Manning. And one thing with Manning, again, they changed the prospectus or changed their investment policy to allow them a little more flexibility to go into emerging markets. They didn't take it right out of the gate, but they have that ability to go there. So you know, they do have material representation there, and their focus has been in more of the commodity producing economies that, you know, have prospered so far, but they had actually throttled that back. So it'll be interesting to see if they allocate more money to emerging markets, because emerging, those types of economy stocks have had a pretty good pullback in here. So we'll see if they shift some dry powder over that way.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I do not remember, and that's my fault, I'm sure, seeing the comparison to, for example, I am international core equity, I am international multi-cap. You're comparing, I mean, our index is the second line item, correct?
And right. Mm-hmm.
But, and then difference, and what is that third entry?
Yeah, that's, no, fair question. The that's the international multi-cap core equity. This is the MF, is the mutual fund universe.
Oh, it's the universe.
Okay, so the number in parentheses, so for the quarter, the Manning Overseas Fund was in the 67th percentile. The median fund in the International Multicap Core Equity Universe of Managers was 6.47.
Okay.
Oh, so it's not a benchmark, it's just a reference number. Okay. You know, if we get a good ranking or a bad ranking, you know, then we can look at that differential. Okay, the average manager was 6.47, we were 5.89, yet we were, you know, 67th, which not a great number, but you can see that the difference was in percentage was pretty small.
Okay.
So type in there. You know, on the positive, you know, looking at the global bond allocation, the index itself, the Merrill Lynch Global Bond Broad Market Index, under total global fixed income, was actually down 0.49%. But the PIMCO Diversified Fund hammered out 2.75%, and the Templeton Global Bond Fund had a huge quarter, up 3.83%. So go over to the year-over-year line there. The PIMCO Diversified Fund is up almost 15%, top 6th percentile of the global bond fixed income universe. And the Templeton Global Bond is in the top 15th percentile with a 16.15% rate of return. So this diversification effort way outperformed. Go up to the total domestic fixed income line, which returned 4.12% straight up.
Mm-hmm.
So your diversification effort into global bonds and specifically into these two managers has worked so far, been excellent.
Very well, yeah.
Because if we didn't reallocate, you'd have earned 4.12%. So that's an outlier, very much obviously to the positive. And then hopping down to the real estate page there on 21 below it. The real estate funds, again, very steady. Little variation in these numbers, which is great. That's what we want to see. American Core Realty, then another 2.5% for the quarter. UBS Real Estate, a little on the lighter end, but you know, right in there, 2%. Year over year then, American Realty came in at 11.2%. versus 11.9, so they finished ahead. Now, in American Realty's case, they're in the 87th percentile of peers, so, okay, that's a potential flag if they stayed there over a 3 and 5 year period. But again, in real estate, we've got to remember that we hired American Realty because they're a very conservative fund, very low leverage on the properties. So when real estate is doing well, and obviously with a double-digit, you know, 11% rate of return, this has been a great environment for real estate. So if you leveraged your investment, you know, you accentuated your positive return because you borrowed money to make more money. So those funds that have higher leverage that are more aggressively managed are going to get higher returns than 11.27. Just because they're levered, you know, if for no other reason, so they're going to have a higher peer group ranking. UBS, again, that's our mega property, trophy property in the U.S. A lot of the appreciation rate of the mega properties has slowed down, and you know, that's why we're fortunately right when we get funded. You know, we miss the big pop. So now things are pretty steady. So we're mostly collecting income, about 1.5% of income, and that fund only saw about 0.5% in appreciation in the underlying properties. But you know, again, everybody has super high occupancy rates. The outlook for real estate suggests an environment, a tightening supply environment. So real estate landlords should be in an increasing position to start raising rents on tenants, especially in the apartments. American Core Realty has some pretty good exposure to the apartment area, and even though there's been a lot of groundbreaking and completion of apartments, you know, multifamily, of late, supply is still really tight there. So
the supply is really tight there.
Oh yeah.
I'm surprised. Is that because of the inavailability of funds, of financing?
And everything came to a standstill because of that reason. You know, during the peak of the crisis,
yeah.
So all the projects were put on hold.
Right.
And then on the flip side of that. Well, there's financing available now, so a lot of the projects that were mothballed are back on. But you still had that period of inactivity that was, you know, 2 or 3 years. And then on the demand side, obviously with mortgage loans, well, the interest in getting a mortgage to buy a home has changed material, obviously, and the ability to get a mortgage to buy a home has changed dramatically. So the supply of renters out there is exceeding, or I'm sorry, I should say it the other way. The demand from renters is really exceeding the amount of supply that's out there. So
they're all in my neighborhood.
Years going down, there are foreclosures.
Yeah.
Hmm. Ocala's bad. I mean, there's so much commercial available for rent.
Really? Yeah.
So much residential available for rent. I mean, it's not a tight market here at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, you know, you can beat people down to almost nothing. Okay, just get in there. You know, somebody in there.
And that's
wow. It's
really bad for what once was, you know, a upper-level income neighborhood.
Right.
And they're not anymore.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, in our little mini pockets, I mean, in the Orlando area, they've broken ground on a lot of apartment projects, and they're doing higher-end projects where they can, are actually able, their, most of the stuff is leased before it's, before they're finished building it, so I guess just...
Depends on where you are.
An hour and a half away, and we've got two very, very different markets, but... Anyway, it's diversified across the country, so they're in the pockets that are strong, fortunately, so... From a rebalancing recommendation standpoint, again, just summarizing maybe the compliance checklist in the back, I mean, the only problem is the Dalton Grenier performance, and fortunately that's been offset by our reallocation to real estate and to global bonds, which have just blown away the returns that are available to us in investment-grade fixed income. So that allocation really helped. The outlook remains pretty steady for that. So really don't have any change recommendations. Always feel like you need to be doing something. We're always looking for new ideas.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's early on, and we need to keep an eye on what's happening with Dalton. But we did the rebalancing during the quarter, so the funds are invested. So administratively, we're in pretty good shape.
What about hedge funds? I know that Mike did a presentation, I think, about the emergence of hedge funds, and I read something in P&I or something the other day about how everybody is flocking to hedge funds. Are we in a position, or should we hold off, or what is your opinion on, and the firm, you as a firm, I mean, are you, is Bogdan looking at more hedge funds as?
Yes, we are, and once real estate is filled out, and global bond is filled out, and TIPS are filled out, which we we're halfway there.
Right.
Yeah. Then we need to look at, should we bring in other alternatives? And so short answer, yes. We are proponents of an allocation to hedge funds. And the route we take or recommend taking is to go through a fund of funds type approach. It's a little bit more expensive because you have a manager of those managers.
Right.
But you have an expert overseeing those, and there's also some thought behind what the different strategy blends are that make the most sense as far as getting return and looking at risk. And you can access fund managers that have super high minimums that we couldn't even think of. So the fund of funds is a great way to be able to access hedge funds in a kind of more of a toe in the water way, and you don't have direct exposure to any single hedge fund, which is very much preferred. So if maybe at the next quarterly meeting I can bring, I'd be happy to bring our hedge fund product.
No, that's okay. I was just throwing that out there, But so we'd probably just better filling up our, like you said, our TIPS allocation and our real estate allocation, and getting those filled up, and then at that point, look at hedge funds.
Yeah, I think from an application standpoint, as the economic and market cycle goes, you're better off filling up the fundamental asset classes, especially at this point in the cycle. Because we would view hedge funds as the asset to have when
downside
the equity
protection.
Markets roll over. Not a financial crisis roll over, but a normal bear market period. That's where the hedge fund allocation is most beneficial. because when you're in a bull market, the hedge funds will always lag. Historically, anyway, never say always. Historically, they've always lagged. Just generic equities. So that's really, and, you know, we feel we're still reasonably early. I mean, we're four years into the recovery, albeit a soft one, but so we still think we have, you know, quite a ways to go with fundamental assets out, probably outperforming hedge funds. So I think we have time on the clock to think about that and bring that in.
Okay.
Yes, I can be brief. That's really all I had. Like I said, it was a pretty uneventful quarter.
Okay.
And January so far was an awesome month. So hopefully February and March we'll see more of the same and have more excitement to report next quarter.
Sometimes not exciting is good.
I said sometimes not exciting is good. I guess it depends on the excitement.
Yeah.
Steady.
Steady. Yeah, steady is good.
Steady 8%, 9%.
Perpetual forward motion.
Yep.
Take that over volatility any day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I did discuss with Dave and with Alicia.
Answer it.
Better. It's a hockey game.
That sounds like the old doot.
Discussing about moving because the reason we've had our meetings in the afternoon was years ago when we had Cottle, when we had our previous consultant, he did us and Daytona Beach, and he would do Daytona Beach in the morning and then drive over and do us in the afternoon. So in order to accommodate him, we had our meetings in the afternoon, and then when we hired Bogdan, they also had gotten the treasury account. They were doing the treasuries, and they had the treasury meetings in the mornings on the same day, just so happened. And then they would do us in the afternoon. Dave's no longer doing the treasury reports in the morning. So we have nothing that forces us to do our meetings in the afternoon. We're not, you know, coordinating with anybody or anything, so I spoke to Astrid, I spoke to Dave, and if we wanted to move our meetings to either 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, that way we'd get it done first thing in the morning.
I would, just shooting from the hip, say 9 o'clock, because...
What did I tell you?
Well, you and I get off at 8, you know, and we're on different shifts, so... You've got it.
I wasn't pushing for it.
To reinforce what that's exactly what I told him.
Now,
the fire station at 8 o'clock in the morning is like total chaos.
Right. Now, that being said, 8:30?
Yeah.
I'm A shift, you're B shift, so what would it be? A shift morning, I'm at work. Well, A shift morning, I'm at work. I'll get time off for the meeting anyway.
Right.
B shift morning, I'm coming off.
Right.
So it would be have to be, there is, you know, I mean.
It would be a little bit of a deal, but anyways, that's irrelevant at this point exactly at what time. I mean, it's something to think about, but you don't have a problem with having them in the morning.
No.
That way we get them done, then we have the rest of the day.
Absolutely.
Now,
as long as, I mean, Ashrita would be,
she's amenable to it as well.
Okay, yeah, as long as it doesn't mess. Well, I know, but I mean, that's, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, you come in the morning and there's whatever shenanigans have been thrown on your desk when you walk in the morning, you know, I don't know how much you need to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because you know, these are quarterly, you know,
okay.
In advance.
Everybody, so. Everybody seems to be okay. Mm-hmm. And the only issue is they hold the treasury meetings in this room in the morning, so we would not have this. Now, Astrida, at one point, we were having our meetings, when you come up out of the elevator on the floor that you're on over there in the white building, whatever it's called these days. As soon as you come in, kind of to the right, there used to be a conference room.
Oh, first floor or second floor? There's a conference room when you come off the elevator to the right.
Yeah, kind of to the right.
That's still available. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of people over there now, and there's a schedule of usually that, you know, is adhered to.
But that's a potential place that we could have the meetings.
Wherever doesn't make a difference.
That's in a different building?
Yeah.
It's that building right there. If you look out the window, you can see it.
Oh, okay, so right to the left of...
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, your entrance is switched.
That one, on that side, where you park. Parking is on this side. You would just...
Please, thank you very much, ma'am.
It's...
Would you like something to drink?
Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's just, it's that building right there. It's just, you don't even have to cross the street. You can park where you park and walk over to it.
Okay.
It's 60 feet away from this building.
Don't forget the cookies sometime. All right,
But anyways, that's, we'll work on it, and maybe we'll get that and have our meetings in the mornings from now on. We just have to find a room that has a recorder, or if we can get a portable recorder. Alicia's looking at getting a portable, or we could have the meetings in council chambers.
Now, does Treasury use this room?
Yes.
Every day?
Yeah, and this one's just as bad as this one.
No, just the exact same day we have our meetings.
Bump them a week. I mean, if we want to have this room, you know.
I get this one.
I mean, it's a quarter of the meeting, so a week's not running. You know, or make it the following Tuesday.
That's a possibility too. Dave, I don't know about how that would work with you, if you would do, we do the next Monday.
Oh, move it up on Monday?
Yeah. Or back Monday, or...
I mean, if this is a perfect room with all the equipment and, you know, everything else like that, I mean...
Would be the second Monday of... It's police in general have their meetings on that day. Now, with the maybe doing
it. We have y'all's today, so next Monday. General's in the morning, police is in the afternoon.
Okay. A week earlier?
Not earlier.
Okay.
It's too close. No, we're the very first one. We're probably your
first. Yeah, we can't. It's really tight for us to get the
report to you.
That's cool. I mean, unless we find a perfect room, you know.
I mean, we could do them on Tuesdays instead of Mondays.
I couldn't do Tuesday. Sorry, I'm
That's
populating my calendar here. My phone is faster than mine. Laptop office, yeah.
Well, why don't we...
It's just an idea now and a thought, and we'll look at all the different options, you know, and I can get with Dave and he can see.
Yeah, I mean, whatever works for, you know, I mean, if we can find a room, then let's, you know, move it to the morning. If we can't find a room, then maybe we do one more meeting in the afternoon while we're trying to figure this all out. I mean,
it doesn't have to be done by our next meeting.
Yeah, that'd be nice, but I mean, you know, we could at least, you know, work it out, you know, ask around. I mean, there may be a perfect room somewhere that's available in the morning. We just don't know.
All right, we'll work on it, and everybody will.
We don't have one, do we?
Entertain any ideas.
I don't think the conference room's recorded.
No.
Training and...
No, but that's... No. It's a dump.
But it's our dump.
Okay.
Yeah, it has personality.
It's not a total dump. It has personality. Down there for a little while. It kind of grows on you, like fungus.
I come from a... town of 1,000 people with it, you know, it was a very rural, funky area, so I'm used to about anything.
We are rural and we are funky.
The second, second Monday of the month.
That won't work for us.
Oh, it won't work.
No.
Oh, okay.
Police in general do theirs. That's when police in general do theirs.
And they do it in the morning?
General does theirs in the morning, and police in the afternoon.
Okay.
We'll discuss. We'll go back and forth. Like I said, nothing that has to happen.
Right. I mean, I have no objections to, I mean, if we, whoever does, you know, finds a room, we got a room in the morning, just change the meeting and let me know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't, okay. It's not that I'm apathetic, I just
All right. Okay. With that, I would like to approve the accounts payable.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Estrada, second by Mr. Williams, that there's no opposition to a unanimous approval. Seeing and hearing none, the motion carries. And the minutes, like to entertain a, these have all been sent to you.
Mm-hmm.
Entertain a motion to approve the minutes of Monday, November 5th, 2012.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Motion by Williams, seconded by Estrada. If there's no opposition to a unanimous approval. Seeing, hearing none, the motion carries. Okay, I'm going to, Driggers Disability, I'm going to skip over that and go to other general business just because Mike just called, he's on his way.
Okay.
And under other general business, I was going to discuss the meeting time. I would like to entertain a motion. I guess we have to do this in a motion form. I'm not sure, but we will. It doesn't have to be because the general plan never does theirs in a motion form, but I'll just, for the record, two participants are going into the drop plan. Wally Brinkman is going in with a monthly amount of $5,464.87. He went in
a few months, hasn't it?
He went in October was his first month, October of last year. But at our mid-November meeting, I hadn't
He hadn't chosen an
option, so we couldn't do it at the November meeting. And Robert Clavier Jr. in the amount of $3,894.42 is going in, I believe. It's as of January 1. January 1 or February 1, but that's the amount.
But the paperwork's done, so it's whatever's on.
Right.
Okay.
You know what his name means, don't you?
I'm sorry?
Do you know what his name means? Do you know what his last name is?
Clavier? No.
You don't? Does anybody know?
It's
All right.
French.
No, it's not. It's German.
Sorry.
It means piano.
Oh.
But it could be a French derivation.
I always sounded French to me, but
Clavier.
Okay. Clavier?
Clavier. It means piano.
Didn't know that.
Call him the piano man. That's what he says.
Right. His father also is a retired firefighter.
Mm-hmm. It could be French derivation. Yeah.
Okay. With that, we will go ahead and it's 2:00. We'll take a 5 or 10 minute break, and then we will re-adjourn in 5 or 10 minutes.
Use a break.
It's 2:43, and we are resuming our meeting February 4th, 2013. Mr. Driggers, who had applied for a disability pension, had come in. We've been in conversation with his wife, and after a lot of discussion and everything, Mr. Driggers has chosen to rescind his disability pension, and he is rather going to go out on a normal service retirement.
Okay.
He and his wife discussed, we looked at all those different options and the positives and negatives of each decision, and after a long discussion and checking insurance rates and so forth, he has made the decision to file under a normal service retirement.
Okay.
he has also chosen to take the one joint lifetime with 100% continued to survivor in the amount of $3,296.98. So I will destroy all these disability records that we have.
That Randy has?
We'll put those in the shredder. And that resolves that.
Cool.
That being the last thing on our agenda, we've already gone through other general business. Did anyone else have anything they would like to bring up or discuss under other general business? No? Okay. With that, it's 2:46. No further business for the board. The meeting is adjourned.
Okay.